Thanks for coming, everybody, even though it snowed and it's a nice Thanksgiving evening. I really appreciate that you made your way out here for this workshop. So I'll just start with a word of prayer and we'll get into it. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for all the blessings that you bring. Lord, I thank you for the beauty of the snow and that we get to gather together and learn from you and your word and your people about how we can better serve you through grief and also how to better serve each other as your body. In your son's name I pray, amen. Okay, so this is the first grief workshop here. We're starting at EBC. And just plain and simple, my objective here is that we would be better sufferers and co-sufferers as Christians. So we'll just start with a Bible verse. Could somebody read out 1 Thessalonians 4:13 for me, please?
But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others who have no hope.
So, does this passage tell us we're not allowed to grieve? No. What does it say about others who grieve that aren't Christian?
They have no hope.
So we're allowed to grieve, but it's to be done with hope, right? So grieving as a Christian is real, it is right, but it's to be done with hope. So I'm just curious, out of people here, who here has experienced grief in their life? Show of hands, yeah. Pretty much everybody, all right? Who knows someone who's experienced grief? So we're going to be talking about both sides of that coin, people who've experienced grief and how to help others who are going through it. And the way I plan to do that in these workshops is the first half will be talking about more speaking to those who are going through grief or will go through grief, and that's pretty much everybody. And then the next half will be speaking to those who will help others grieve. And that will also hopefully be everybody in this room some way. And while there are multiple things that we can experience grief over, I think we're going to mostly look at grieving over the death of loved ones. And I think that's because if we are equipped to handle it at its worst, then we can handle it in the smaller manifestations. Does that make sense? So, and finally, if anybody has a question, please just ask it when you think of it. I know personally, if I don't ask something, I forget, and then it's gone with the wind, and I don't get answers that I wanted. And also, I don't promise to have all the answers, and that's why I want more people here, and that's why I hope that if I don't have answers, someone in here will. And so, if you have a question or something helpful to say, please just say it. And I'm also hoping that for each of these workshops that we can have someone share about their experiences with grief in some way, shape, or form, whether that's a testimony or interview. We'll figure that out yet, but we'll start with this week with my testimony of grief. So my first experience with grief was when my uncle David died from cancer after surviving multiple other bouts of it. He was one of the cool uncles. Just to share a little story, us kids were staying at his house for a week while my mom and dad were on an anniversary getaway, and I was sick and stayed home from school the whole time, and I got him sick, so we just both played games together. And while we were doing that, he said, "Dylan, I know you're a real generous guy, but next time you get ill, please don't share it with me. He loved Jesus, and I still think about his example of persevering in his faith during his sickness. What's interesting, I think, is that I grieve his passing more today than I did back then, partly because he was a pastor, and I want to be a pastor someday, and I just want to be able to talk to him about that. A year later was my grandma's passing on my dad's side. I was not as close as I would like to have been with her, because I only saw her once a year, if that. And I felt more like a spectator watching my dad grieve, but I noticed he was very lonely at this time, and I was sad for him. Fast forward years later, my mom had a brain surgery to remove a growth that would have caused problems if it was allowed to remain. And something about the surgery affected her brain in such a way that, and I don't know how to explain this any better, it changed her personality. She was one of my favorite people to talk to. She was a very charismatic woman, and she could keep a conversation going, and pretty much anyone involved in a conversation with her would have had a belly laugh at some point. Or they would find themselves really helped by her wisdom. After the surgery, she had less of a filter. Her little mannerisms were no longer there. And her tone of voice and how she talked changed. It felt like she was a stranger in my mom's body. There were brief moments where her old self came through, and I cherished those memories. But effectively, I was grieving for my mom while she was still alive, because she wasn't the same. And I was also very angry with her for certain aspects of my upbringing. And I felt horrible for being angry with her, given the state she was in. And that's where I stayed for a while, angry with her, while simultaneously feeling like she was half gone. To pause with my mom for now, I was married with Geralee for less than a year, and we found out her sister had a rare cancer in the winter. That summer, she was in palliative care, and she died in July. Ashley was one of the first in Geralee's family to make me feel comfortable as a new member of the family in some way. And over time, while being married to Geralee, we became friends as much as in-laws could. So there's a sense where I felt I had lost a friend when she passed away. But even more important, my wife was racked with grief. I'm hoping Geralee will be able to share more of that with you guys in the future. But as for me, I had no clue what to do as her husband to help her. All I could do was just be there and pray for her as she was sobbing almost every night for the first while. And through the whole process, we both were certain that God is faithful and he was going to work through this somehow. God's sovereignty was foundational for us. And I remember sitting on the couch with Geralee in January, reflecting on this, and we actually ended up having a conversation about how life seemed to have gained its equilibrium again. We figured out this is the new normal. We're comfortable with it now. The new normal with Ashley gone is a regular adjusted reality for us. And it was only a day or two later that my mom died after that conversation. Going back to my anger toward her, I'm glad to say that I did forgive her before she died, and that was almost 2 years ago that she died. Her death was tragic. She died in a house fire, and I still don't know the cause of the fire. Probably some electrical issue. When she died, I had already processed a lot of my grief over her. So I don't think it hit me as hard as it would have otherwise. Not to say it didn't hit me hard, but it was more manageable than it would have been otherwise. Ultimately, I was relieved that she was no longer suffering from her mental illness and poor living conditions when she died. And she's now herself again, rejoicing with her Savior. I thanked God that in his providence, he cut her life of suffering short and took her home. During this process, I was also able to see the body of Christ at work as people from this church worked it out so that we didn't have to worry about a single meal while I was around trying to get our affairs in order. I was able to focus entirely on being my mother's executor and tying up all the loose ends. And Jerilee was incredible in this as she kept me on track when I wasn't thinking straight. My other grandmother passed away last summer, and once again I was thankful that she did not have to suffer because she had dementia closer to its beginning stages, and it would have progressed to be much worse as time went on. So I thank God for his mercy in letting her come home sooner before she was too far gone. Jerilee and I also made it a point to visit her over the years leading up to her passing, and I'm now very grateful for that time. My mother also felt estranged from her mother for a time, and now I often contemplate how they're completely reconciled now. Throughout my sister-in-law's, mother's, and grandmother's deaths, my greatest comfort was that God is good and is in control of everything, and nothing surprises him. So that serves as a good segue into the start here. So when we enter grief, we're moving into a new season. It's like we're moving into a new house because a tornado came and destroyed the last one. And we're bringing a U-Haul with all of our baggage with us to move into this house. So in other words, parts of our life, whether it be what we think, say, or do, will have an effect on our grieving. So this is where I ask you some questions. Does anybody here have some examples of kinds of baggage you could bring into your grief?
Regrets are pretty common.
Regret? Any others?
Anger can come into it.
Anger, yeah. And I'm thinking more specifically things leading up prior to the situation we're grieving over. So what could be perhaps parts of our worldview that would influence how we grieve? Pride, that's a really good one. Self-reliance, right? Anything else?
I think you realize you had a small view of God before that. You just didn't fit into what you thought God would bring to your life.
Bad theology, would you say that fits in there? Yeah. Any others? I think maybe doubt of God could be a subcategory here, right? How about unrealistic expectations?
I
What do you mean by that, Dylan?
Unrealistic expectations of how life should work. We talked about that this morning, didn't we, during the sermon, right? Maybe a material mindset, as in you're relying on things or people in this world, right? So, if these are all things we can bring into our grief, well, how do you think these things might influence how you grieve? Does anybody have examples of how this might just affect things? I'm just curious if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Pride will isolate you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not helpful.
Nope. I think, again, in mind of our sermon series, depending on things in this world, you're depending on vapor, right? So these are all things we can bring into our grief, and it'll seriously affect how we handle it. But if we have all these bad things that will influence how we grieve, I think we could maybe have the inverse of these also to help us. So instead of pride, you have humility. I need others. I can't do this on my own. Good theology rather than bad. Bigger view of God, his sovereignty, how he handles things, how he's created this world and he has a ultimate plan for it. Trust in God. Realistic expectations of how this life works. And like we also talked about this morning, an eternal mindset. So here's the thing. Do we often think this through as much as we should before we grieve?
Of course not.
Of course not. And we don't find out where we are sometimes until we're smack dab in the middle of our grief. Paul David Tripp, in his book titled Suffering, which is in our church library, and it's a very helpful resource. I encourage you guys to take it out there. It says, trials reveal your true thoughts and desires. Where you have been looking for life, where you have sought meaning, and where you have looked to give you hope. And then he has another quote. Suffering draws out the true thoughts, attitudes, assumptions, and desires of your heart. So it's helpful to consider the kinds of things we bring to our suffering that cause us to trouble our own trouble. So what does this suggest? What should we do now before we grieve?
Good theology.
Yeah, get some good theology. Work on your humility. Set your be part of reality. So all of this to say is the time to prepare for a storm, to prepare a ship for a storm, is before the storm comes, before you ever set out to sea, right? Not during the storm. So the time to prepare for seasons of grief and even for helping others grieve is now, before it comes and surprises us. (Clears throat) So let's start preparing a little bit. Could somebody read out Romans 8:28? And I'm a little grateful, but also a little miffed that Chris talked about this also this morning, and it really works out to prepare us for this.
And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose.
Okay, so this is a verse that I really clung on to during my times of grief. But honestly, it wasn't until that recent that I had a full picture of what this verse is communicating. So as we learned this morning, this just reading this verse on its own is really broad for application, right? So if we keep reading, Mitchell, could you please read the next two verses?
For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified.
So the good that God is working all things together for is to conform us to the image of his Son, who, by the way, was a man of sorrows, well acquainted with grief. So if we're expecting to follow him, we can expect grief. So he's conforming us to the image of his Son for our redemption. And so I'll contend that grief and suffering is a unique as a means to this end, to conform us to the image of Christ. John Piper said it this way: times of grief are like a special fruit that has nutrients for your growth in Christ you can't get any other way. Could somebody read James 1, verses 2 to 4 for me, please?
Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing.
So we're supposed to count it all joy to experience trials of various kinds. And I believe grief is one of the greatest trials that we can experience. Seasons of grief are one of the greatest opportunities to grow closer to God and cling to him. But on the other side of this coin, they're also one of the greatest opportunities to fall away. So this is yet another reason that preparing beforehand is so important, so that we can chomp down on this fruit and eat it for all it's worth for our growing to become more like Christ. And so the experience of eating the fruit is unique for everyone in some way. There are a lot of similarities in how people grieve. And so we're going to go back to common ways people grieve. Some people had mentioned regret already and anger. Are there any other ways people respond to grief? Thinking more in these categories now. Typical ways people experience it.
Depression.
Yeah.
This might not be a common one, but thankfulness. For me, it's looking at that person's life and all the things that I'm thankful for.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. I mean, we heard that in my little grief testimony there. I was thankful that my mom was no longer suffering, right? That she was with her Savior. Any others?
Exactly one of those lines of relief if you watch someone suffer.
Relief, yeah. We'll just add that to this.
Maybe denial or manicness.
Yeah. Kind of, maybe like you feel like you're losing your mind a bit, right?
Maybe, or, yeah, but like, but other people notice it more than you do, is what I mean by manicness. It's kind of just
yeah.
naivety. But
yeah, that makes sense. Any others?
I don't know how to explain, but like brokenheartedness, like your heart feels like it's being ripped out of your body in a way that like no other thing brings besides grief.
Absolutely.
Sure, this is in line exactly with what you're doing here. My greatest loss left me disoriented in a way I've never been before or since.
Yeah. Life is very different after we lose loved ones, right? Especially if they've been around a long time, you kind of wonder what to do with yourself. Is that what you're getting at?
Or
everything. Everything, yeah.
Beginning, finish, starting everything.
Yeah, yeah.
No focus, no. So glad for the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing we need to change.
I think it often affects our physical health, too.
Disappointment or confusion.
Mm-hmm.
You have plans or goals with someone that's close to you, and suddenly they're not there.
Frustration, maybe, couldn't change the outcome of this, wanted it differently, could.
Yeah. I wonder if that's something that could produce anger, right?
Everything I've read on this has the little steps of it, and anger has never been more than one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of people I know go through that.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I found times of grief have been, there's been some spiritual dryness. I really struggle to go to the Word and pray. I need to be reminded constantly.
I feel like for some people it could be the opposite too. It's just like that could be a really
Yeah.
That spiritual dryness or drought can come because it's hard to focus.
Yes.
Constantly, it's just hard to get your focus off of what you've lost.
Yeah. So everybody grieves in a unique way. So if we'll just make an analogy here. Imagine this is a cake recipe. Okay? And in the fine print it says, doesn't matter which ingredients you use, just use some of them, and also throw in however much you want. Right? And here's, to make things even more complicated, you're not even the one mixing it. And to add on top of this, something that flavors the whole cake is icing mixed out of two things. That baggage we talked about leading up prior, good or bad, so all your bad, good theology, your big, tiny views of God, all of that gets mixed into the icing, and how much you love the person you lost. grief is really an expression of your love for that person. And so, all that to make for a really unique experience for everybody. So that's why when someone says, sometimes it might feel like, if someone says, I understand what you're going through, it feels like a half-truth. So these are things we can expect when it's time to grieve. It helps to know what there is to expect should the times of grief come to prepare us. So just really quick, I'm wondering if any of you guys have any experiences you want to share. I know Doug did mention some already about how it just reoriented everything and flipped everything upside down. Are there any ways that these things have affected you in your times of grief?
Kind of alluded to it, but and certainly our relationship to the Lord is massive in consideration. But the person that's passed away that we lost, I mean, that's even paramount.
Yeah.
Their relationship to the Lord. And it's often torment when we don't know what the relationship was.
That was one of the worst parts of it for me when Ashley died. We don't know if she had decided to submit to Christ in the last moments of her life. We know that she did hear the gospel, and so she could have made that decision. But honestly, the worst part for me was people would come up to Geralee and I say, misunderstanding Christian belief, and say, well, I'm sure that helps you a lot knowing where she is now. For me, that was the worst part of it.
Something that's not on your list on the board is guilt.
Guilt, yeah.
When my father passed away, I felt strangely guilty that I wasn't more remorseful than I was. He had left us a long time before that because of his inability to function and communicate. And so in some ways we had lost him a long time before that. Whereas my mother was very different, and I didn't grieve in the same way, and I often felt guilty about my response to my dad's death.
I know when my dad passed away, he was young. I landed up in the hospital that night with, I thought I was having a heart attack. He had 5-6 bypass done. And it hurt me so much that it was unexpected. We thought he was going to survive the surgery and everything, but he didn't. And so my heart just hurt so bad that I went to the hospital, and then the doctor told me that I was just having, it wasn't anxiety pains, he said it was grieving pains that I was having, that my heart was still okay, but I thought, it wasn't, but I did have physical health issues right now.
Yeah, I don't think sometimes we consider physical health as part of it. At least I don't. Maybe I'm projecting on all of us, but I didn't really think of that very much. But it's very real. Like even with Geralee, she was quite sick for a while, and she was not feeling herself for a long time.
Often loss of someone close to you is going to wreck your sleep pattern. Mm-hmm. And without your sleep, you're going to be a mess physically.
Yeah, lose a lot of sleep over it too. That's serious. So there's a lot that we can expect in grief, and it's a little funny when we haven't grieved before, and even for different people, we might grieve different ways. But we at least have somewhat of a picture of what we can prepare for. So I'm of the opinion that grief isn't exactly a process that comes to an end. I've heard it explained this way. So if you imagine you have a box and there's a ball inside, that ball's your grief, and at the start it has barely any wiggle room inside of this box. And every time it hits the edges of the box, that causes a response. You feel the pangs of the loss as it hits the edge of the box, and every time that happens, the edges of the ball gets filed down, and so eventually it's been whittled down to a solid core that's much smaller, but it's still there, and it still hits the edge of that box sometimes. It still causes pain, but less often. So what happens over time is not that things go back to normal, but you become accustomed to the grief, and you've learned how to cope, and it becomes the new normal. So we'll have a brief look at maybe some beginning steps for coping with grief, and Lord willing, we'll get more in depth next month. So what are some small steps we could maybe start with to begin our grieving process?
The big part is appreciating that death is normal in the sense of since the fall, nobody gets out alive. And then, mm-hmm. So you can't go through it. It's just how you move through. So recognizing that it's not unusual or abnormal in that sense, it's going to be a reality for everybody to know.
Yep. I think, like I said, just knowing that your grief is a response to that comes out of your love for the person lost, right? And so that kind of gives you permission to be patient with the process, right?
Also, if you live each day in such a way that you would think that this could be your last day with people that you love, if you would treat those people and respect them and love them, and if you did that daily and pray for them, that would help as well. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have all these regrets. Mm-hmm. There's still other ones that you can have, but...
I think some practical guidance for you enter the stage of grief. Someone you love just died, right? I think for me, one of the important things when my mom died was just doing the next thing. Like just getting errands checked off the list when I was being my mother's executor, just closing accounts, figuring all this stuff out. It really helped me to remove distractions, relieve some pressure, and just be able to kind of be in the moment, I guess you could say, of my grief. And I think from reading, in preparation for this, one of the big ones was postponing big decisions. Like we already talked about, you're not thinking straight when you're in the middle of this. So just, we can make impulsive decisions that make it worse for us and add more weight to our burden, right? And I think one of the big ones that I read, and it's part of the Grief Share program that actually a lot of the books I'm using are based off of, but it's to lean into your grief. Because if you don't, you're just making it last longer and you're prolonging it. And so just don't postpone eating this fruit that God has given you. Let him use this to conform you into the image of his son. And ultimately, these things all serve the last thing we should do, and that's to pursue God, right? It's one of the more obvious ones probably to us, but just praying and being honest with God about how you're feeling, going to his word to see truths about him. So some examples from my testimony were God's goodness and his sovereignty. What are some other truths about God that could comfort us in our grief?
He's near to those who are brokenhearted.
He's near to those who are brokenhearted. So his presence. I also think of his grace for us and his purposes for what's happening.
He's the only one that truly understands.
The only one that truly understands, yeah.
He was here to experience every human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Along the line of his sovereignty, I was reading According to the Moon book, and she was just reflecting back on different times in her life and was using the analogy of when you make an embroidery picture or something, on the back of it you've got knots and you've got different threads and things that don't make sense, and you've got, you know, black threads outline things or whatever, but then she would just keep that in mind as she went through different seasons of her life, knowing that, you know, when she passed away and was with the Lord, that she would see the tapestry of the story that he was weaving with her life and circumstances, and that when you see the other side, it all comes together and makes sense.
That's one of my favorite pictures for God's sovereignty. Just, you don't know what he's doing, but knowing that we will see it clearly eventually, and that we can trust God that he's making something beautiful.
With the story bigger than us and our perception.
Yeah. Like, really, we're only looking at a couple threads on the back of that tapestry out of the whole picture, right?
His promises would be a huge one.
His promises, absolutely. So I think one of the best places we can go is to the Psalms. There are many Psalms that may as well be diary entries from God's servants who are grieving, and they cling to him and his promises. So I'll actually get some people to bring up some verses from the Psalms. Could I have somebody volunteer for Psalm 34:18? You can put up your hand and take that one. Okay, Jordan. And someone for Psalm 147, verse 3. Melanie. Psalm 30, verse 5. Amy. And Natalie, do you want to take 40, verses 1 through 3?
The
near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit.
The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Someone had already referenced that. It's just such a beautiful picture. 147.3.
As he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds.
Mm-hmm. 30 verse 5. So there's seasons of joy and seasons of grief, right? And chapter 40, verse 1-3.
I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog, and he set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord.
So these are all great passages from the Psalms that could encourage us, right? And there's a lot of Psalms that we can use as a template for our prayers, right? Particularly Psalms of lament. So could I have somebody read Psalm 13, the whole thing?
How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me.
So we see in that it's a very real, raw prayer. Like the writer of that psalm is really sharing their grievances and their feelings, everything with God and entrusting it to him. So just as a little segue into the next section after the break, one of the things that God has given us to help us through grief is Christ's body, the church. We already talked a bit about this last month when Jordan and Chris looked at Romans 12. But if we're going to receive help from God's people, what are some things required of us?
Humility,
recognize that you need others, right? And to admit our weaknesses in that moment. What else?
Really obvious and practical, but just to put yourself around the people of God, to kind of make yourself do that next thing and be around others instead of isolating. And
yeah, don't suffer in isolation. That's a suffering in a way is spiritual warfare, right? So if you're going to isolate yourself, that's a fast track to get you killed on the battlefield.
Would vulnerability be something?
Yeah. Vulnerability, being honest with others, right? And maybe telling others, like, I can't see things clearly right now. Help me, right? I think often when we're suffering or grieving, there's just a reality that the person you talk to the most is yourself. And You just have to let people interrupt your private conversation with yourself, right? If that makes any sense. You're saying all sorts of stuff about what happened, what if you did this, what if this person did that, and just letting others interrupt so that you don't spiral with yourself. And I think finally it's important to remember that our suffering doesn't belong to us. So for that, we'll go to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 to 9. Somebody read that when they get there, please.
Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of all mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our afflictions, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. For as we share abundantly in Christ's sufferings, so through Christ we share abundantly in comfort too. If we are afflicted, it is for your comfort and salvation, and if we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings that we suffer. Our hope for you is unshaken, for we know that as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in our comfort. And we do not want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia, for we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raised us to death.
We see here our suffering belongs to God, and it's not to be, and it is to be shared with others, because they'll be used by God not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others, as they experience His comfort. Right. So there's a sense where if we isolate ourselves, we're also neglecting our brothers and sisters of an opportunity to be comforted by God. Suffering is a community project. So how... does anybody have experiences of how they were comforted by God in their suffering? Beyond what we've talked about, truths about Him that have comforted us, but I'm thinking more just genuine experiences where you've been comforted by God.
I feel like the peace that passes understanding that just comes and you just can't explain it any other way.
That's such a gift that we have. Like, that's something that Christians can have. And nobody else.
Are you looking for, like, specific examples, Dylan?
Yeah, I think it's the spirit of this passage, being comforted by God through other people's being comforted through their sufferings.
Just like a really specific, like, time that I can think of, like, being specifically comforted by the Lord, and, was just like, I had been thinking through a passage of scripture and writing a song on it, and that song had a lot to do with just, yeah, God's sovereignty and the good and the hard. And anyways, that being said, it was like right after that song was kind of like, I had finished writing it, and it was like, it was done. Like, that's something, yeah. Unexpected friend unexpectedly passed away. Mm-hmm. And that was just like a really gift, a big gift from the Lord to have that song kind of like ready for when I was gonna be in a season where
those things would be hard.
That's awesome.
Find the visitation services and a memorial service. You know, it's not just a nice thing that we do, but to have a room full of people who were touched by my wife's life and ministry. Her twin brother said to me, I had no idea. She touched so many people's lives because he wasn't paying attention. It's a real comfort to have so many people come and support you and encourage you, and you realize you're not the only one. It's really this pain. That was tremendous.
Yeah.
Just the presence of my kids, too, after my wife died. Just spent a week or two with me. I dreaded the day that I left the house, too. I couldn't stay. I went back.
We're comforted and helped by God's word. Often, like we read in the word, there's usually verses that just really stand out, and it's just God speaks to us through his word.
Mm-hmm. Comfort I got when my mom passed away was when we had her committal service, God gave us the most beautiful sunny day. And they did open up the casket, and after they had her in the spot, facing the eastern sky, you know, I don't think there was a tear. Everybody was rejoicing. It was just a blessing. I was just encouraged. I'm going to see her someday. She is with Jesus, and she loves Jesus, and he could be coming back in that eastern sky, coming to get us. And she was just there earlier. Her body wasn't there. I mean, her body was there, but she wasn't there. She was already with the Lord. I was very comfortable. I left that almost laughing. I was just so happy. I was just like really. It was such a blessing. It was a gift. It was such a gift. And she had led a full life. Yes, the last years were not good. But I was very, I just was so blessed.
I think particularly about my grandma and just the Christian heritage that she passed down to her kids and her grandkids, and just the influence she had, you know. And just how God was going to keep working even though she was gone in our family. Okay, so with that, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in about, let's see, we'll come back at 7:45. We can shake out the wrinkles, go use the washroom, grab a drink. Yeah. Okay, so last month we read in Romans 12, verse 15, to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. So as Christians, that is a command for us. And we're going to start learning how to do this in terms of what to say, or principles for us for what we can say and what not to say to help others who are grieving. Now, just a show of hands, how many of you really struggle with knowing what to say to a person and that just paralyzes you, right? Yeah, that's absolutely me. Even in cases where we are grieving a similar loss, such as the loss of a parent, and or we have grieved that, and there's someone else who's lost a parent, I still really struggle with knowing what to say. So just really quick, what are some reasons that we can think of for why it's difficult to know what to say or to just say something.
One thing comes to me right away is I've heard too many people say, well, that was a stupid thing to say. Like, other people said that about somebody else saying something, well, that was a stupid thing to say. So I'm scared I'm going to say that stupid thing.
Yeah, yeah. You're worried about saying something dumb,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pressure we put on ourselves, it's unrealistic. Like, if what I'm going to say isn't going to fix it for this person or at least move them towards that, why say anything, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we will talk a little bit about that. anything else? Yeah.
I know, but I mean,
yeah. Our culture's not comfortable with people crying, but God's given us tears after we should use them.
Absolutely. All right. We'll move forward. You're spoiling too much of what's coming up here. Yeah. But I think if there's something that people who are grieving want others to know when it comes to what to say, it's this. Just start with the principle of just say something. It matters less, it's an important word, less, not that it doesn't matter what you say, because you can still say dumb stuff. But what matters more is that you say something. Many people who grieve, whether they know it or not, know who has and has not acknowledged their grief in some way, shape, or form. And when people don't say anything, it hurts. So, I just have some encouragements for just saying something. To just say something often knocks down perceived barriers. You might feel like, oh, they don't want to talk about that, or they've got their walls up. They don't want to talk to me. You'd be surprised how much they do want to talk to you if you just start the conversation. Like Jordan said, you don't need to have unrealistic expectations that you need to solve the problem. You won't. So does that take some pressure off? You're not going to solve the problem, but it's still helpful. We don't need to say everything all at once. Just start the conversation, right? You don't need to say everything you're thinking or think the person should know immediately. There will be time for that. And I think just going back to the eating of the fruit analogy, recognize that by opening the conversation with a brother or sister about their grief, you're aiding them in that process of eating the fruit, helping them lean into it and process their grief with God. So, what things would determine what we say and when we should say something? What are some factors that we might evaluate?
Your relationship to the person you're talking to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your relationship to the person who passed away.
Yeah.
It matters whether you knew them personally or not.
Yeah.
Strength of relationship is huge.
So your relationship with the person who's grieving and also your relationship to the person they're grieving for. Yeah.
Like in a place where they'd be like able to give you an honest answer or feel really awkward being honest in that context?
Yeah, your environment.
Which may be, Deb.
Oh, you go first.
Maybe like amount of people, and I think you agree with this, Natalie, amount of people shouldn't be the only control factor there. Like, the most people I'm around in a week is Sunday mornings, and that's probably one of the better places for someone to. But you know, I don't even know if I can think of a good place where it's not appropriate to bring it up just because there's a lot of people. I mean, probably at their job, maybe. You go about it that way, but I'm sure there's somewhere.
Yeah.
Relationship to the Lord, again.
Yeah.
It changes the whole conversation.
Absolutely.
Talking to a believer or to an unbeliever, about a believer or an unbeliever, both of those.
Yeah. I think also where the person is in their grief, like how far along in it are they, right? How are they doing?
Kind of maybe just reading where they're at would control the conversation, right? Like if you perceive they're dealing with it really healthy, then maybe just offering some words of encouragement or just knowing that they're being seen. But if you know that they're putting it off and it's been months and you actually haven't seen them grieve properly, like if you're close to them, if you can know that you know, right? Just, yeah, get into context with how that person's handling it and how you want to care for them.
That can be a huge help if you see someone's on the right track. You just say, hey, look, I see you. I see how you're grieving, and really you encourage me and how much you're depending on the Lord. And that just really does spur them on to love and good works, right, in their grief. What are some principles that we can exercise in terms of what we're saying or maybe not doing when we talk to someone who is grieving?
Don't try and explain why you think it happened. Mm-hmm. I know some of you have been like, this happened because God thought this, and that's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. There are truths about God, but there's also the fact that the Bible tells us we can't get into the mind of God. His wisdom's higher than ours. We don't know his thoughts. They're higher than ours. So trying to step into his shoes, that could be dangerous, yeah.
So in other words, don't try to diagnose.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not helpful to say, well, I remember when that happened to me, etc., because then the focus can switch to yourself. That's not what it's about. And your story is, like you said, you're listening to their situation and their process of grieving. Maybe we can't say anything that on the spur of the moment might say, like, I don't really know what to say, but I want you to know that I care, love, how it, you know, the process of grief or the situation you're in. It matters to me.
Yeah, like, that's on my list here. Don't make it about yourself, which is so easy, because even me, I'm a proud individual. I like myself a lot. And it's sometimes even just the path of least resistance, because it's easy to talk about ourselves, right? But it's the easiest isn't always helpful.
Maybe when we offer encouragements to people, like whether it's a promise that God has made to us about the resurrection, just who he is, something like that, offer it to them with a posture of just care and comforting them within their grief, but not with a posture of expecting that to move them along. Like, I've seen people comfort grieving people as if, like, they're waiting for them to start trusting these promises a little more and finding some joy. And I mean, you know, eventually we want to help people get there, but especially with fresh grief, you don't want the grieving person to feel like their grief is annoying you. You need to hurry up, right?
Yeah. I remember a situation where someone I know, their cousin had killed themselves. They weren't a believer. And when they explained that to someone, they kind of just said, well, it's appointed to man to die once, then comes the judgment, as if that's supposed to move them along. And since talking to them, that bothered me more than it did them, but that's still super unhelpful.
It can be awkward, but you don't want to endorse bad theology either.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Stupid, you know that.
Yeah. Don't
sometimes
reinforce. Absolutely. Yeah, don't reinforce bad theology.
There's another angel up in heaven right now. Yeah. Another thing that's not good to say is get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to my sister. She lost her cancer at a young age. Understand her grieving and just say, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not helpful. It hurts. Yeah, it hurts.
That really cheapens their experience, right?
Kind of like just maybe one way to say all the things we're saying is within safe biblical guidelines, letting people set the terms of their own grief, right? Like, we're not writing their story for them.
Mm-hmm.
They actually are in the driver's seat here. Like, we want to help them. We don't want to let them mm-hmm. into anything. And they're not in a super great spot. But trusting them to tell us where they're at.
Yes, like, yeah. Yeah.
But we can't really fully understand that, so.
Yeah.
Does it get annoying? Like, is it bad to always ask a person how they're doing? Like every time you see them or every time you always be like, hey, how are you doing, where are you at? Like, is that an annoying question? Is that a bad question to ask?
I guess it depends on the individual.
I think, yeah, for me that's not annoying. I found that really helpful that people are really trying to keep tabs on me and just know. That tells me that person loves me and they really just want to know and keep me in their prayers, right? But for some people, that could be very bothersome. So just to reinforce, sorry?
Don't ask the how are you doing question unless you're actually prepared for an answer.
Yes, yeah.
So if someone's grieving, if it's just a quick passing and you don't actually have time, don't ask how you're doing.
Yeah.
Because they'll be able to tell, you know, but if you have the time and you're willing to communicate that, then go ahead and ask.
Yeah.
The strength of relationships can affect the answer there too, though, right? How are you doing? Just like everybody lies at church. Fine. I do. I know it. I don't lie at church. I know. But just the strength of the relationship is this somebody that I just, you know what, I'm a real mess right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say it to everybody.
I think exercising discipline. You don't need to say everything you're thinking. This is a long haul. And sometimes silence is awkward, but it's helpful to just sit there with the other person in the silence, not knowing what to say. And kind of in terms of the within biblical parameters, letting them lead the way, some things are meant to be saved for later, right? When they're ready to hear it.
That's a cultural thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
We're down in Mexico, we did some visiting, and they warned us in these tribal groups. They're just landed there, but silence is not awkward for them at all. We just have to look at each other. That's incredibly awkward for me. And they were just glad we're visiting us. Yeah. You know, Job's friends, they were the best help to him before they opened their mouths.
You've got a point there. Yeah, his friends up to Elihu are like a great example of just what not to do. We already had mentioned it, but not being put off by tears. People crying feels really awkward, especially if you don't know them that well. But like Doug said, God gave us tear ducts. Crying is an incredible thing. Like, you just think about what happens when you cry. Pressure is taken off of you. You're releasing tension. You're bringing pain outside, right? And so... It could be. Yeah.
That's okay too. Yeah. Share your Kleenex.
Yeah. And I think it is helpful to cry with others. It's like Doug and others have said, like, knowing that this person had an impact on others is comforting, right? You're not alone in your grieving. But God designed tears, and they're great. So really, Hannah had brought up the idea of, oh, I don't want to make them cry again. It's like, there's nothing to apologize for. It's not your fault that you made someone cry. It's just something came up to the surface. You helped them bring that up so that they can release it, right? I just specifically think of Callie when she comes to us because she misses her mom and she's crying and she can't sleep. And we just have to tell her, like, it's okay to cry. It shows how much you love your mom still. And also it's an opportunity for God to comfort you. Ask God to comfort you. It will be amazing. And maybe you have nothing to say and you cry with them, like Liv said. Weeping with those who weep. Anything else that we can think of? Good principles to just help us know what to say to guide us in how we speak to others who are grieving.
Pictures are a great opportunity. If there's pictures, depending on where you meet the person, if you're in their home, pictures on the wall or nursing home, like wherever, but a picture like, wow, you know, just lets them talk about this person in that setting or whatever. And when it's just how you get the conversation going, I found that that's a great way to get it started.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow, is this you on your wedding day? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've heard too that it's helpful to, like, actually just, like, talk, like, not be afraid to say the person's name who passed away and to talk with them and invite them. If you don't know who it was, but you know the person who's grieving, who they tell me about, your dad, your mom, your sister, whatever it is.
Yeah. What that does is it esteems their grief, right? You're affirming their grief when you take the time to listen. And maybe you're saying things like, wow, I'm so sorry for you. Like, may I pray for you? Just giving them some credit, really, for what they're going through. And with that goes not saying things to make their grief seem less than, like, get over it. Or even just simple things like, if someone says to you, well, you understand because you had a similar loss. Just like, I actually had someone say that to me, and I really wish I responded with a, that's true, but I don't understand what it's like to lose a parent this way you did specifically and in that condition and
how you're dealing with it, right? Again, going to how grief is unique for everybody. Any other principles for what, how to say things or how not to?
So when that anniversary comes up or whatever of that person's loss, to just even bring it up with them, or, you know, I've been thinking about you, and as you remember your parents or whatever, and just praying that the Lord will comfort you or something, or just reaching out to them on those anniversaries of that person's passing or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. Sticking in there while they're grieving. Like this again, this is a long haul. We don't need to feel the need to hurry people along in their grief. And I think there's a temptation towards that because we hate seeing people we love grieving, right? It sucks. And we just want them to be back to their old selves or in a place where they're happy again, right? But trying to rush this process could really hurt them. And I think that also comes out in how sometimes people check out after a time. It's like, well, they seem to be doing better in public. Their grief is out of sight, so it's out of mind. But it's still there. So just not assuming that it's over for them just because they seem to be doing better even, right?
I heard someone say, like, what you're talking about there, after a time, people don't want to bring it up to them because it's after time. And it's like, the person grieving has not forgotten about it. So it is actually helpful to them to bring that up and talk to them about it, you know, rather than thinking, oh, I don't want to bring it to memory again. It hasn't gone from their memory.
No, it hasn't, yeah. Do we sometimes assume we know what the other person's feeling? I think it's like Jamie said, sometimes we just immediately assume someone's sad, right? You must be feeling so sad right now. But for some, it's rejoicing, right? They might be feeling it in some other way. It's like, no, I'm celebrating. They're with Jesus now. And there's a way they should process that too. And so helping in that way. Grieving with those who grieve and rejoicing with those who rejoice is not mutually exclusive from each other, sometimes. Could even be a mixture of sadness and joy. And so you just start laughing and crying with them as well.
That reminds me of when we were in the funeral home getting things arranged. The person who was working with us there said she'd never heard more laughter in the room full of coffins than her. So, than we were there.
Any others we can think of?
Maybe just along the lines of it's never too late to bring it up to somebody, just realizing it's never too late to bring it up to someone in the sense of it can be maybe easy to feel shame or guilt that you haven't talked to someone enough about their grief, and you just think, well, like, I don't really have a right to bring it up now, right? Like, I really should have been keeping up with them right after what was fresh, and but just realizing that person's not going to be mad at you for bringing it up now. Like, well, it's about time. Like, they'll just be glad you eventually said. They'll probably just assume you were praying for them the whole time until then and thinking of them often. And so
yeah.
Stop feeling bad and letting that be like, not letting that shut you up. So,
Nancy and David Guthrie lost a child, and it took a while until a parent came up to her and just said, look, I don't know what to say to you because I still have my child and you don't. And I just don't want it to be awkward. Like, I just don't know what to say to you. Like, you're kind of take down this wall. And she's just like, well, by saying that, you just did. You opened the way.
And sometimes we assume that somebody is thinking that, like, well, remember that I haven't talked to them yet at all, and so why would I talk to them now? We're assuming something. We have no clue. That person maybe doesn't even realize that we haven't said anything. But it's, well, our own minds tell us things that are not. We know we haven't said anything. We're feeling guilty, maybe. But that's the other person probably hasn't even thought of it. But it's just the assumptions that we make knock ourselves down and criticize ourselves. And, like, again, it's guilt on our part saying we haven't done anything. Well, then do something.
Yeah. And that creates a cycle too, right? Like, you're going, I didn't talk to this person, so I can't talk to them now. And then it just keeps going, and then you just feel worse about it, right? And you're really just torturing yourself there. Just say something to them. It's like, it might be late, but at least start the conversation at some point, right?
It's almost like when people that we know and love are grieving, that makes us so uncomfortable. Like, it just reveals our own self-centeredness. Like, it's our own pride and our own awkwardness that, like, we don't actually want to risk it being awkward in order to actually love them well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just exposes a lot of self.
Absolutely. I think something that we could do is if we see someone who's in a lower place, like they're grieving, they don't seem to have it all together in that time, that can kind of translate into treating them like they can't do anything, or more like a child, saying, hey, like, you don't know what you're doing, so I'm going to tell you what to do now. So being condescending and acting as a parent instead of a brother or sister, and that could just be fixed simply by saying, instead of, you need to eat, hey, do you think it would be a good idea to eat something? Right? It's a simple change to just trying to guide them, not push them. Or maybe that's not the right word. Pushing is good sometimes. But just doing all their thinking for them. And creating dependency.
Push them, not baby them.
Yes.
Like, encourage them as if they're actually competent to carry out your encouragement.
Yeah.
That's where helping with the to-do list.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you have to do? What do you have to get done tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah. Not what's next on your list, but instead of, oh, you should put this on your list, right?
What if you're visiting? Is there something on your list that can help you do on the way?
Yeah, yeah.
You probably change the light bulb on your room, but maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think being slow to speak and quick to listen. Honestly, if you're helping someone grieve, there's quite a good chance you will not be doing most of the talking. You might not be talking at all and just listening, right? And there are even some people who that's all they need. They just need to get it all out, say something, and then they go, I have a better understanding of what I'm feeling now and what I need to do. It's like that when they're explaining these things and they're talking to you, they're going on an investigation. And you're just kind of the sounding board or the stenographer, just typing down what's being said and just listening, right? And a last one I want to talk about here is don't ask painful questions to satisfy your morbid curiosity. That comes out in ways like, was he wearing a seatbelt when his car crashed? How did she kill herself? What were the details of the autopsy? Or was he a smoker when he had the heart attack? Things like that. I think if we take a second to think about what we say before we say it, we know if it's to satisfy our curiosity or to help the person, right? That's not to say you just shouldn't wonder about those things. It's perfectly fine if the person says it to you or invites you to know those details or to share with them. But it's not for us to pry out of them, right? Now, I'm wondering if anybody here has experiences they want to share of times where things others have said were really helpful or really hurtful, or maybe not saying anything at all was hurtful. In your grief. Does anybody have experiences of in that realm that they want to share?
I appreciate people just sharing their relationship they had with my wife.
Yeah?
She's polarized people. It's fine. You always knew what she was thinking. If you were being an idiot, she would tell you that. And some people can't handle it, but, it's good.
A couple of things. When someone would say to me, for example, after the loss of one of my parents, my favorite memory of your dad was, that was encouraging, uplifting, helping me. It helps the person with their grief process. And Hannah was just reminding me when both of our parents passed, former president of the college that they were on staff on many years ago called each one of us as siblings. Say, I've been thinking about you, so much appreciated what your dad did or whatever, and been praying for you. That was the least expected call for us at the time, but so much value. So, it's important to do what you think you should be doing or could be doing to encourage or comfort. Do it, it can really help.
I had a girlfriend in my childhood days. My dad passed away, as I said, at a young age. I was
well, 40 years old about when I passed. So, yeah. Anyways, when we were at the, again, the committal service, I hadn't seen her for years because we lived in Ontario and she lived in Manitoba. So we went to, well, then we were in Saskatchewan, but we went, I hadn't seen her since school days. But she came to that committal service and we were there praying and she came walking across as I was standing there and she came and put her arm around me. And like I had not seen her since like high school. And it was like, whoa, I hadn't talked to her. That really touched my heart too. That was very, very special. Just didn't have to say a word. Just came and put her arm around me. I don't think I've seen her since. Loved one passed away very well, but I think that still makes a step towards that relationship and showing that you are making steps to care for them or want to be there for them in this situation.
I remember my mom's funeral. It was here, and the sanctuary was pretty packed. And it was incredible to just look at all those people and think, these people are either here because they care for me or they cared for my mom. And that was huge.
Be not helpful, you've already said it, but is comparison or making it about yourself, right, when that person passed away. So within a family, if like one person is grieving more than the other, one is like, that can be very unhelpful to each other when you're making it about yourself rather than the person that passed away.
I know we've talked a little bit about not making it about yourself. I think there can be an appropriate way of just letting someone know that we understand grief, even if we don't try to pretend we understand their grief. So this might go back to some of what we were talking about before, but so this might be a little out of present context, but saying, "Well, I know what you're going through," is not very helpful. But saying, "I lost my mom a few years ago," that kind of thing might, depending on the context, be a helpful way of letting them know, like, you're not alone, and you understand grief, if not their grief. It can be a way of just opening up the conversation. So there's ways of identifying without necessarily unhelpfully thinking about it. I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think that's true. Like, you're getting your foot in the door for conversation, and it's... I have appreciated comments like that where it's, hey, I lost my mom 2 years ago, and then they include the... So if you want someone to talk to about it, right? Or you... And... Or using it as a, yeah, like you said, just a way to start the conversation and add on. I'd be interested,
like a comment like, I'd be interested to know how you're handling this, right? And yeah, I would agree. It's a good conversation starter, and I don't think that's really making it about yourself if you're just it's a method to invite them to talk to you about it, right? Rather, but I think it becomes a problem when you, because there's a sense where it can come out of, like I said, it's just easier to talk about yourself. It's like, oh, well, when I was grieving, I did this, this, and this, and that really helped me, when that might not necessarily be helpful to them. If it's a way like, I had this happen, so I have all the solutions for you. Yeah.
It's something like, I lost a parent too, it hurts, doesn't it?
Yes. Yep.
Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
See, I agree with that, and I don't think that's making it about yourself, but what I was referring to is, like, for example, like, this person who passed away, I was closer to this person than you are, or making mom like me more than mom like you. Like, I've seen that situation where I'm saying that's very hurtful and unhelpful right in that scenario. So then it's making it about yourself, like, oh, well, I should be grieving more because I was closer to this person than you are.
Yeah, you see that a lot in even things like reading of the will. It's like, why didn't I get this candle holder or something? I was closer. You know, like, it becomes a whole thing, right? But it's just, I think, that could be so deadly when to do that, when you could be helping each other go through the grief together, right? And yeah, I've seen situations where that's killed relationships. And there are some families that are just split apart for years and years because of that.
So how would you give someone, so like if you wanted to encourage something with something that encouraged you, how would you do that without talking, like without making a conversation about you? Like, is there a way that you can be like, this encouraged me, and like point them to it without making it about you?
You could even just ask, like, may I share something that really encouraged me when I was grieving? I think it could be helpful to you, right? That's still not making it about yourself. It's just, sharing something that you find helpful, right? But again, it's about how you do it. It's like, this helped me, so it must help you, right? Or you if you are really worried that you're making it about yourself, just say, I wonder if this would encourage you, and then just say it without involving yourself in how you say it. But I don't think that's 100% necessary.
Be ready for it not to encourage them and realize they're not broken. If it didn't encourage them, like it encouraged you.
Yeah. So we're getting to, well, we're past the time, actually. But sorry, my iPad's just being silly. So with this, I hope we see how serving God's people, weeping with those who weep, isn't simple. It's not easy. And it takes a long time. And we should do it in a way that doesn't override God's plan for grief by trying to hurry it along or invent our own devices to help them. I think these things can pretty well be summarized in the command to love your neighbor as you'd love yourself, or do to others as you'd have done unto you. Just what would be helpful if you were grieving? What wouldn't be? So I'm hoping we could be better brothers and sisters for each other as we fulfill that command, and also as we fulfill the command to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. And I feel like I'd be remiss with what we've been seeing in the sermon series on Ecclesiastes lately. I just can't help but consider the hope we have as Christians when we grieve and when we help others grieve. This life is just vapor compared to the eternity that awaits, and that's a huge encouragement. Our griefs serve to make us long for that eternity and to groan for things to be made right and turn our eyes to Jesus. And there'll come a time, whether in this life or the next, that we'll glorify God and bring him praises for the griefs that he's bestowed upon us to be stewards of. So that was a lot to go over. I hope you guys are still awake and thinking through these things. And I'm thankful we have a whole month to consider these things and think it through. How could this affect us? That's why I wanted us to have journals, so we could write down things and think on them throughout the month, because it is a lot and we might not retain it otherwise. I hope we're encouraged by the fact that grief and trials is something that God gives us so that we can become more like his son and be an example of his son to others who are experiencing grief. So next month, Lord willing, we'll be looking at more practical, particular ways to cope with grief and how to deal with the pain. And also we'll be looking at more specific things that people typically say and what to say instead. So with that, I'll pray and then we can close. God, thank you that you are with us when we grieve. Thank you that you care for us and comfort us. Whether that's with yourself or with your people. God, I pray that we would learn to grieve better with hope and looking to eternity, as well as helping others who grieve, showing them the hope that you provide and pointing them to eternity. God, may we all look to Jesus as we run this race. In your son's name I pray, amen.